This is Snowman in the Morning. Where true sports talk lives.
He did what?
I did not need to be told that.
Where I'm starting to get a lot more great guests on the show, thanks to my producer, Steve Joyner, executive producer, the lovely Dr. K, and the one that I have for y'all right now. Well, Steve always gets me these Renaissance guests who are absolute delights. And like I said, the one that I have for you right now was a school superintendent turned actor. I mean, then I read 33 years in education. Then he a published Western author, Showdown on the Guadalupe, I Heard the Quail Whistle. And I started looking down this guy's credits, and I said I had to have him on. This is Bill Foster, and he joins me right now. Bill, how are you, my friend? Good to have you.
Well, thank you for having me. I don't know if I can live up to that intro or not.
I don't know if I can live up to this resume I have in front of me. Man, you tell me about how'd you get started in Western writing?
I've always loved Western genre. You know, grew up on a farm, so, you know, always watched the Westerns. Lone Ranger was my favorite growing up. And of course, it was reruns. I'm not that old to see it originally, but you know, watched every John Wayne, Jimmy Stewart, Glenn Ford movie that was ever out. And when I decided to start writing, I had this urge, and I thought, why not, you know, write about the Westerns? I wrote a modern day story, but, you know, I really felt like my calling was the Western, and so that's what I started doing more of, and then got lucky to actually get into a Western called The Sun, and that was my very first acting experience, and then it just snowballed after that.
How much fun are you having doing this? How much fun are you having?
If it all stopped right now, I've had the time of my life. it has kind of stopped COVID. We'll talk about this later, but, you know, we're in the process of filming that the Western Showdown on the Brazos. 3 days to finish it, and we shut down. So we're just holding our fingers crossed. Hopefully they'll open it back up soon so we can finish up and get this thing going.
You got into acting, I guess some a lot of people will call it later on in life, but what turned the button? Mm-hmm. What pushed the button for you? What was the moment where you said, sure, I don't care how old I am, I'm going to pursue this?
Yeah, I never think about my age when I do anything. That's good and bad. I always said I'm old enough to know better, young enough to not care. I'd retired in acting, and I've never acted before, but I just, you know, when I'd watch movies, I'd always go straight to the how they were made, behind the scenes, things like that. My wife says the most boring part of the movie. I always say it's the best part of the movie. And, you know, go to like find movie sets and go there and look at them on vacation. You know, she's like, not another one, you know, but I was so intrigued with it. And then when I saw this casting call for The Sun, I just went and stood in line with 1,500 other people. And on the whole, I thought I'd get lucky, walk down the street, and I was selected as a recurring character. And so didn't have any lines, but was right there beside Pierce Brosnan and all those A-listers. You know, when you're selected as a recurring character, then that, you know, you're right up there with them. You just, the only difference between you and them, they've got lines and you don't. And so then eventually, you know, got a few lines here and there, and being a writer, it just evolved. I thought, you know, one day, why don't I try to direct a movie? What started out as a very small project, I thought 4 or 5 actors, and we'd knock it out with an iPhone, turns into a full camera crew and 250-plus actors, so it kind of ballooned on me. Distribution, you know, we got several companies banging on our door. They've seen our trailer on YouTube. We put our trailer out, and it had 300 views the first day, and I was just ecstatic. We're over 14,000 views now, and so it's even beyond ecstatic. And I pinch myself every day. And we're already working on our next project, even though we hadn't finished Showdown on the Brazos, which I think is going to be a great Western. It's low budget, but yet going to be very good. You know, there's low budget good and low budget bad. It's going to be low budget good. Because I've seen some $200 million movies. It's pretty bad. Couldn't even watch them. but there is a niche for this type of movie. You know, I won't do another one self-funding it. I didn't do any public funding or anything like that. I did it all myself with a few small investors. But I can show just what I can do on a small budget. And it's be much bigger than this next one because everybody instead of doing free grants. But I entered the new script. It's called I Heard the Quail Whistle into some contests. And it was a finalist in Europe. And I got notified this morning. So one for one. Got one notification back. So we're hoping it takes off.
Tell me about I Heard the Quail Whistle. That is a very interesting title.
There's a story behind the title. This course is the book. Tell you that part first. I couldn't decide on the title. I mean, a lot of times when I'm writing, and writers know this, sometimes you start with a title and then you build a story around it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the title hits you in the middle of the night. Sometimes while you're writing, I'm going to name the title or change it two or three times to something I like. And I was going to enter the unpublished work into a contest and had to have a title. And I did not like the titles I had. I mean, they just did not sing right. And we're 2 days away from entry, and I still don't have a title that I like. And I go outside, and it's right at dusk, sun setting, and it's in the middle of summertime, and I'm feeding my whale whistle in the background. And I said, there's my title right there. I heard it whistle. So I ran back into the house and put some quail stories into the story, you know, because it needed to die somehow. And then the script won the best fiction and best overall book in that contest. And so since then, we've named everything Quail Whistle. Quail Whistle Vineyards, Quail Whistle Production Company. And we're kind of sticking with that. But so it just kind of fell in there. But now that I've turned that manuscript into a screenplay, like I said, it's starting to take off, and that's going to be our next project. Now, the story, my wife challenged me. I've written several novels. I've had, as you mentioned, one of them published. And she said, you're writing all these novels about the male hero, you know. And I always write it kind of like Greek philosophy, you know, the hero that does not want to be the hero, the reluctant hero. And she said, you need to write one for the hero, the heroine. And you can't turn down a challenge from your wife. I mean, there's just not a way. There's not enough beer in America to turn down a challenge from your wife. And so I sat down immediately. We were on vacation. I had the laptop, and I sat down and started writing it. And the twist on this movie and the story, too, is a woman is the actual hero of the whole movie. And she goes through a lot of different changes in her life. But it's in the Old West, 1880s, somewhere around in there, set in Nebraska. And, you know, the promise of free land to some Irish immigrants coming from Ireland, from the potato famine, that get over here and they get the promise of free land and they take off. And so then from then on, her life changes, and this follows her life change over a couple of years. There's two main characters, Molly O'Connor, just the lady, and then the sheriff, which is an older actor Marshall, who they're trying to get to retire, he refuses to retire. So there's a story within a story there, too. So, then when I came to the screenplay, I didn't realize it was very budget friendly because all the speaking roles you can get, if you're cast for The Blacksmith, we'll get your part done in 2 days and move on. And so I don't have to have you there for 2 or 3 weeks, you know, drawing a salary, working 30 minutes or an hour a day, like I've seen some. And so everybody's there for the same amount of time except for 2 main actors. And so it's going to be really helpful on the budget on there. So let's say you have a $100,000 budget for everybody else. I can get a lot of actors in there for that. You know, no more than, you know, be there a couple of days now. So we're probably going to make it a SAG movie. The first one was an independent. This will be a SAG. So we're going to get those big name actors in there and try to go at that. And I've got a really good law firm backing me, and they're stationed in LA, this law firm, and they're lining some stuff up for me. So it's amazing. And I think it's all the game sometimes.
I told y'all I have great guests here. Now I when I asked you to come on the show, I asked you this question, and I gotta put it out there. Be you Longhorn or be you Aggie?
Oh, yeah. always an Aggie. If the Longhorns are on national TV, I'll root for the Longhorns.
Oh, man.
Always an Aggie.
Always
in fact,
an Aggie.
I'm wearing a maroon shirt right now. But
bring back the...
Yeah, I went to...
Without making it so dangerous, bring back the bonfire. Bring back the rivalry with Texas and Texas A&M.
Yeah, I went to East Texas State, and they've been bought out by Texas A&M, so I always say we bought Texas A&M out. But anyway, but yeah, that was a disaster. You know, when people say bonfire, they have no idea what that bonfire actually looked like. It was like seven or eight stories tall.
Yeah.
Logs, big, you know, huge logs. It was just amazing. But unfortunately, that, you know, some people lost their lives on that. But yeah, that was an amazing tradition. That's what I like about A&M. Go down there, went, visit a few friends once in a while. Back when I was in college, watched a ball game or two. Loved it. I actually was at the ball game where the SMU and the Aggies got in the fight out on the field. You remember back in the early 80s?
Yes.
Craig James and Eric Dickerson were scoring every time they touched the ball.
Yep.
Aggies weren't very good that year.
I just wondered.
The only excitement was at halftime.
You know what's funny? When I got introduced to the Pony Express, Eric Dickerson and Craig James, that was when I first, you know, started getting into college football. And I knew all the big schools, Michigan, Ohio State, especially being from Chicago. I'm in the heart of the Big Ten with, like I said, Michigan, Ohio State, Michigan State, Illinois, Northwestern Iowa. And then one Saturday afternoon, I'm in the kitchen with my mother and she's cooking something. My dad had just got home from work. And then all of a sudden, an SMU game is on CBS. And I'm going, wait, who are these guys? I don't know these guys. And they're playing at Texas Stadium. They're playing at old Texas Stadium. And
yeah,
once my once my dad saw Eric Dickerson, he told me, you know, pay attention to him. He's going to be a good one. Yeah, got hooked on college football since then.
You know, I watched a special on the Pony Express and said, you know, I'm not going to say every college breaks rules, but they were breaking a lot of rules.
Yeah.
And nobody really cared until they started going up around your area and stealing their athletes. And then people started caring.
Yeah.
And that's what happened. As long as they were taking Texas athletes and other athletes from around the area, it was okay. But when they went and started going California and up north stealing the athletes from the big time colleges,
then they started barking.
People got upset. Then it started wrinkling some feathers, and so then they got caught doing some bad things. Got the only death penalty I believe that college has given.
Yep,
they're starting to bounce back finally now. But you know, those scholarships, it's just so tough. But yeah, those are some good days back then.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the good old days of college football, like I said, when I really got into it, the Pony Express were the biggest part of the reason. And then here's a strange story. 1995, I didn't have, until 1995, I really didn't have a college team that I followed religiously. But when Northwestern went to Notre Dame and beat Notre Dame in South Bend, that became my team. The Northwestern Wildcats became my team after they beat Notre Dame, and 95 was the year because they beat Notre Dame, they beat Michigan, they beat Penn State all in the same year, and that was when I got my team. So my team will always be from home, the Northwestern Wildcats, and I'm talking with an Aggie fan. This is Bill Foster. I invite y'all to research him. Go check him out. Tell everybody where they can find you, my friend.
That you can find me on IMDb, and we've also got an IMDb page for Showdown on the Brazos. That's what we've been working on. And then you can also go to my Facebook page, and then the Showdown on the Brazos Facebook page. And you can always messenger me if you have questions or anything like that, how to answer all of those. And sign up for email because it got out. And so I'll do messenger, but I'm not going to. Well, it got a little hairy there for a while, so
I'm going to
change that. But maybe check those places out and see what we're doing and check our progress.
Bill Foster joining me here on the program. An absolute delight. Thank you, my friend. If we get college football this year, I'd love to have you back.
Oh, man, I can't wait. Thank you. Can't wait for college football to kick off, and can't wait to talk to you again.
Absolutely. Got more stuff for you, folks. Stick around. Snowman in the Morning, back in the flash.